In the California Road Trip Republic, we believe you take adventure for a ride. Whether coastal cruising, mountain motoring, or redwood roaming, discover beauty around every turn. Your road trip can kick off from anywhere.
Starting route.
But it should always start at visitcalifornia.com. Then buckle up, crank those tunes, and discover why California is the ultimate playground.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Everybody loves a lover. I'm a lover. Everybody loves me anyhow.
Hello, dear listeners.
Hi.
And welcome to yet another episode of the unforgettable podcast In Bed with Nick and Megan, starring world famous sports icon Nick Offerman.
What's up?
Yeah. Wow, that was your sports voice. And me, his assistant, Megan Mullally.
Terrific.
And today, I mean, hold on to your hats, because today our guest is, I don't know, Sharon Stone.
What?
How
Not
did that
a big
happen?
Deal.
What? I'm a big deal in my kitchen right now, let me tell you.
How are you, Cher Bear?
I'm good. My kids are rating my dinners, 1 through 10.
Oh, they are? Uh-oh. What's That's the tough. Highest score you've gotten so far?
I've gotten a couple tens, I want to say. I'm pretty proud of.
Wow. Well, this
my
is news to me.
My fried chicken and my stroganoff got tens.
Oh, my gosh. I want fried chicken right now. I want your fried chicken.
I'm very proud when I get a 10. Because prior to COVID, I wasn't a big dinner maker. We ordered out a lot and I threw things at them, and they had sort of been in that kid phase of pizza and, you know, burgers. And all of a sudden when I started to cook, you know, it's not going to be pizza and burgers. So I started really cooking, and now they're just like waiting, what's for dinner? And they're sous chefing and they're cleaning up, and it's,
oh, nice.
It's been such a nice family experience. I have to say we've really gained a lot from this experience.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because I didn't know you were a cook.
Well, many, many years ago I used to cook, but then when you have little kids, they don't want what you make.
Yeah, right. How old are your
they
kids now?
Chicken fingers. Now they're 13, 14, and 19, and they're all about to have their birthdays.
Oh, wow. Wait, so what sign are they all?
I have a Taurus, Gemini cusp, and 2 Geminis.
Oh, wow. How's that?
It works for us, I think, if we think of it astrologically, because I'm a Pisces. Mm-hmm. So it's a very good combination. You know, we're all good together, because we don't need, we're like sort of a house full of cats. We come and go towards each other when we feel like it.
Well, I'm fascinated. I mean, I think that's really generous of 3 teenagers to give you such high scores. Usually, teenagers are a little more miserly with their praise. And I'm curious, like at the end of the meal, do they each hold up a little placard with a number on it, or how does the scoring take place?
No, I have to ask them for the score. But, you know, it is the one time in the day when I really do see them and get to spend time with them, because the 13 and 14 year old are like, they're Irish twins and they do everything together. So they go to school, you know, they sit at the table and do school together, and then they play computer games all day. So unless I'm putting food in front of them, they could care less if I am around. It's how I'm not alone, for one thing. I have this time to be with them, which is very nice. And it's our family time. But otherwise, I'm pretty much on my own.
Do you think you'll keep this up after we get out of our quarantine, whenever that is?
Yes, I think so. I think we've all really come to it. Yeah, that we like it so much.
Oh, I love that. Well, Nick is the chef in our house, and although I did make peanut butter chocolate chip cookies that were pretty damn good.
I'll second that. That was a 10.
Thank you.
But I didn't think the conversation was going to go to this wholesome place so quickly, but this is a topic of fascination with me, because I grew up in this big family, all that come from farming in the middle of Illinois in a small town called Minooka. And that was a huge part of our family. We had four kids, and every day everybody showed up at the dinner table. Dinner often consisted of a lot of things we grew in our garden. My mom and dad are both great cooks. They're very frugal. And, you know, without thinking about it, that was where I think our sense of morality and neighborliness and citizenship was sort of established and reinforced, was around that dinner table. And
yeah,
I've been
exactly.
Very aware in the modern day, because naturally when you're given the opportunity of like, do you want to cook a big, like fried chicken is very laborious. Like it's wonderful to make, but it takes a long time, you know? And if you can say, hey, what if somebody delivers us a bucket of fried chicken? That has a lot of incentive to it. And before you know it, nobody's having dinner around the table anymore. And so
right.
as a parent, how do you feel about that?
Well, that's how I grew up too, in a small town in Pennsylvania called Meadville, which was by the Great Lakes. So we had all those ports, which of course brings all that crime and mobs and all of that stuff, but it's also Amish country. So we had those kind of two things conflicting. And, you know, we had a big, like 2 acres of yard on the edge of a ravine with a stream running through it. Very, very country, very wholesome.
Beautiful.
My dad was a hunter. And so we ate most of what he either hunted or fished for. And then my mom grew a giant garden, which she then canned, and everything went in the basement in this beautiful, like scientific order, lovely. And then that's what we had summer and winter, was from the garden.
Brilliant.
So we pretty much lived from the land when I grew up, also with 4 kids. And we had dinner every night together at the table. And I agree, that's where it happens. All the comedy and all the warmth and all the punishment and all the everything and all happens at the kitchen table.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Wait, I have a question for Nick, which is, will you make me fried chicken?
I will.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever
made it? I'll teach you. There's a pretty easy way.
Oh, you made it. It was so good.
There's a pretty easy way to make it. Which is that you take your chicken parts and you dry them, and then you just put egg yolks in a bowl and kind of beat them up. And then you can use, I use this stuff called glutino, which is the gluten-free dried breadcrumbs. You can use panko, but panko for me is a little too spicy.
Okay.
It's a little dense. So I like these glutino, and you just toss it in the glutino and throw it in the pan.
Okay, I'm going to do that. And you separate the yolks from the whites.
And then you can put your seasoning either in the breadcrumbs or on the chicken, like your
one
garlic
of nature's
salt or
finest
your
glues.
You know, things that you put on, yeah.
All right. Thank you for the tip.
Yeah. Nick actually did make me fried chicken last year, and it was incredible. I don't know how I could have forgotten such a feast.
There's a lot of water flows under our bridge.
That's true. So how are you feeling this week?
Feeling good.
Last week was rough
because I had already lost my godmother in Ireland at the beginning of this. Then my adopted grandma went to hospital in New York and died. She had complications. She had COVID and she had something else. So they call that something like co-COVID or something. And she died. And then the next day, my sister and her husband have a home that they Airbnb, and they go away when they go away and live in their home in Montana. And someone robbed their home and smashed it up. And it was just a lot of, you know, and the police weren't coming because at this time, the police are busy with different things. And I don't think they want to go to a lot of this crisis, to some of these things. They want to go to the urgent, not the things that have already happened. It was difficult. And then just trying to understand where this virus originated is complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, just all of it is very complex. It's a lot of strange new territory for all of us. You know, I have a friend in New York, and the morgue truck where they just are keeping the bodies, is one of them is just sitting outside her apartment window.
Yeah. Wow.
And you know, there's a lot of stress and pressure in that. And I think that everybody's learning all these new things, new things about just how to cope with it. Like today I went out for the first time. I went to get a COVID test and I hadn't been riding in a car in like six, seven weeks. And just driving in a car, the car felt so like, oh, we're really moving now. Yeah. Like my equilibrium wasn't used to driving around in a car. Like the whole thing is very bright and big when you go out again.
Well, it seems like, how did the streets seem to you? Did they seem really deserted or medium or...
They're pretty deserted. I mean, my appointment was around midday, so it would probably be when the most people were out. So I would say at some of these little mini malls where there's dry cleaners and pharmacies and this or that, there might be 8 cars. But on the street, going to a light, there might be a car or two.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, because Nick and I have been out a couple of times to go to the grocery store, and the first time we went, there was no one. I mean, there were, you know, a couple of, you know, every once in a while you'd see a car, but then the last time we went out, it seemed like there were a lot more people, and it was making me nervous that people were starting to get too relaxed.
Well, you know, they're opening the states so that they don't have to pay unemployment,
right?
So that, you know, it's cheaper to open the states and deal with the more people that will die than it is to pay unemployment. Obviously they're not opening the states because it's over or because we have a cure or a vaccine or something has changed that's going to benefit the people that we're opening it for, or that it will really, it will boost the economy only in the, I think, the effort to not have to pay all this unemployment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, but that's really horrible, isn't it? And then what happens when they open the states and there's another spike and then they have to pay even more unemployment?
Well, there'll be another spike, but I don't know that they'll go back to quarantining exactly. I don't know what's going to happen, but I mean, well, God only knows. I mean, maybe they'll quarantine for the amount of time that not to pay. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a politician, and God knows I certainly don't know how to think like one. So I don't know.
It's becoming more and more stark, it seems to me, that some people in our country, and they generally are people interested in the wealth of our country, are openly pay more fealty to a pile of money than to human beings. They express their love and devotion to money, to profit, over the lives of human beings.
Well, yeah, it's all politics at the expense of people's lives. I don't know.
I mean, I just hope that, you know, it's apparent enough that it will drive people to the polls, so that,
you know, 44 million people died of AIDS. And that didn't drive anybody to find a cure.
Mm-hmm.
So I have, I don't know. I feel sort of sick to my stomach because, I mean, now the New York Times announced today that there are three separate groups that are making, you know, trying to get a vaccine for this. There's a billionaire group, a Manhattan Project, and an Oxford and somewhere else. And that's great because I guess people feel that everybody is at risk now.
Yeah. Well, if the politicians feel like they're next, that could only help. But you are coming at it from a rare vantage point because of your extensive activism and particularly with AIDS. So,
yeah, I mean, it's been like 25 years at least working on this. And, you know, these are the same doctors that I've worked with. And
like Fauci and
yeah. And so many of them I have a personal relationship with because I spend so much time around them and raise money and change laws and changed public opinion and changed our thoughts about the way we treat each other. And just to see us get to such a better place with AIDS, just to have this happen, it's horrifying, really. I mean, the struggle with HIV/AIDS was so brutal and so long. And, you know, standing before people as there was nothing happening. And I remember this point when 11 million people had died. And I spoke at the UN, really impassioned about how it was going to affect us globally. And we couldn't keep turning away with this view of our wealth and everything. And that it was going to, every time it affected people in the third world, that we would lose business here because nothing was just made in one place.
Mm-hmm.
Parts were made everywhere. And in the third world, when someone died from AIDS, the whole factory shut down so that people could go to their funeral because they were much more tribalized. And I tried to explain how this was going to happen and affect global economy, how AIDS was going to affect global economy. And no one wanted to pay attention to me. And I was like, put your sandwiches down, God damn it. This is like, you know, and I really started to be really tough about how we had to address AIDS. And the UN said I couldn't come back unless they could pre-approve my speeches. And I wasn't willing to do that. And then as things got more and more and more explosive with AIDS, and there was 20 million people dying from AIDS, and then 22, and then 26, and it just kept growing, it became more evident to everyone that, oh yes, this is affecting our global economy, and it's affecting us globally. And then we started to be able to dig in. But my concern now is how many people will have to die on a global level before we have a global reality, pushing together as one to deal with this. Because, you know, this is moving. It hasn't even affected, you know, our indigenous people yet. It's not yet really hit Africa and all of these people in the biggest way that it's going to. And those mass deaths are impending. We think we don't have hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Well, or even the ability to wash your hands.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
so my concern here is we don't even have the ability to test in the first world country. And now we're looking at a global pandemic and imagining we're going to go back out to work in a few weeks. How's that going to happen when it's going to hit places like Africa? And Africa's had 4 to 5 crop seasons of intense locusts. And so this wiped out their food. And now the locusts are coming here. We have locusts arriving here. And when we see the locusts, we're supposed to photograph them, by the way. So if you see locusts outside, which we're starting to see here in California, you'll recognize them because they're really big. They're a couple of inches tall. We're supposed to photograph them and post them so that the United Nations can tell if they're the locust from Africa or if they're the locust from the East, so we can start to understand the migration for the food shortage that's impending.
You know, I was talking to a friend the other day and she said it's starting to feel insurmountable. And I said, yeah, I think that's what's sort of beginning to dawn on many people.
Well, I don't believe that anything is insurmountable. Maybe that's my own sort of spirit or my own nature, or because of all of the hideous and horrible things I've seen and been through with AIDS, or maybe it's because my dad survived esophageal cancer with a 3% chance of living 3 months.
Wow.
But my family and I, we just decide that nothing is insurmountable, and we figure out what we're going to do and move forward. And I think that's also maybe because, like you, Nick, I grew up in a small town with a family that did not, my dad made $14,000 a year, and we had 4 kids, and we thought we were rich because in my community, we kind of were.
Yeah.
We kind of had it together because my mom had the garden and my dad was a great hunter, and we had this sort of big farmhouse, and, you know, my mom was very together and knew how to cook and sew and do everything. And so we looked like we had it together, even though we were so poor. And I don't think I ever realized how poor we were until I was going to my high school dance. I think I was a senior and I walked down the steps off the front porch. And as my mom leaned out to pull the screen door closed, I saw that her shoes had holes through the toe and I could see her toe. And I realized she didn't have shoes that were okay. And that in that very moment when she closed the door, I realized that I got a dress for the school dance and she didn't get shoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think when you grow up like that, things don't seem as insurmountable because you have to climb out the window to shovel the snow away from the door to get out. Or you just keep going.
Well, you face it. I mean, you grow up with a sense of practicality, of compatibility with your surroundings. And so instead of sort of dwelling on any particular bad news, you simply look around for the work that needs doing and you get to work.
Yes.
And if it, you know, and you achieve small things and that provides a positivity, whereas inaction can lead to, you know, negativity and depression. But you say, all right, well, let's clean up the house. Let's weed the garden. Let's see if the neighbors are okay and so forth. And as a community, that's how we survive things.
I think so. I think we have to really start to notice our neighbors and notice if the people on our street, especially the elderly people, if they're okay, check in on them regularly and make sure they have food. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's a lot of people that can't get out to get food. I mean, my next door neighbor was already on an oxygen tank. She already has a lung condition. So, you know, we make sure that we just fold her in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been checking in on our neighbors, and we've actually been gathering as many, because we see a lot more neighbors now walking right. on the street, you know, right. not what we didn't see anybody before this. And so we kind of been gathering everybody's contact information,
right.
which is good to have.
I think that's really smart. And
if there's a food shortage, what then what's going to happen?
Well, you know, I think then we're going to have to start dealing with that. The fact that we don't have food delivery and that our farmers are, you know, plowing under their crops right now is really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's really heartbreaking that like so much of the food that we do have is just being rolled under right now. I mean, I guess I would suggest that everybody plant a garden, you know, stock your freezer, and certainly have some sense of, I mean, we grew up, you know, my dad, I mean, once my dad was sick, my dad was a really hard worker, worked in a foundry, but he had a surgery once and we were a hamburger helper powdered milk family. And I suspect that that'll be what happens again.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that so many people in the States in particular, that because that's what we're most aware of, seem to be in complete denial about what's happening?
I mean, I don't want to sound unkind, but I think that people are very selfish. And we have become very singular in our behavior, particularly because we've become so technologically driven and we can get everything with a push of a button and people want what they want when they want it. And even each other, relationships don't really last. People treat each other disposably. And I believe that this has been really great on that front. People I know, their relationships are either ending or becoming really great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, because they have to face each other for real.
Yeah. Nick and I are splitting up.
No, yeah. You guys are so lovely. Honestly, I can just say you're lovely people. You're wonderful together and you're the kindest friends. And it's so great to know both of you and to just start to get to know you, Nick. I have to say, you're a lovely couple. And
thanks, Sharon. That's so nice.
I see this with other friends where they're just so close. And I see this with my children, just how wonderful it is to just be with them all the time, to have them here. It's great. You know, my kids are actually doing better in school. You know, it's been especially good for one of my sons who does better when he tests, when he sits alone and apart, and he has the time that he needs to do his own tests. His grades have come up a lot. I mean, he's almost straight A's right now.
Oh, wow.
And that's what he's going for. And it's really simply because he's actually getting what he needs. Because you can tell somebody at school and they can do it as much as they can or feel like it on that day. But when he's here, he really is getting it. And it's interesting to watch his confidence grow as a result of that.
That is nice. You know, I was at your house one time and I got to see a couple of your kids' rooms, and I love that you let them pick the art that they wanted in their room. Mm-hmm. They have real art in their rooms and you let them pick
right.
it. And then was the room sort of then kind of, you know, decorated quote unquote around the art that they, or around their sensibility?
No, they chose everything.
Everything.
They chose
wow.
their wallpaper. They chose the moldings. They chose their light fixtures.
Oh
they chose
gosh.
Everything. Now, we did it together, and they told me kind of what they were into and what they wanted. And they have distinctly different personalities. Mm-hmm. My one son's room looks a little like he's like in Washington, D.C. at the Hay Adams. You know, he has the desk as you come in and the American flag and the wallpaper that looks like it was from the Hay Adams. And my other son's room is like he's some kind of he's a nature person. He wanted the antler chandelier and the wind wallpaper and the furry rug. And, you know, so you never,
that's so
you know,
interesting.
Yeah, the fish wallpaper in his bathroom. So, you know, he's very nature guy.
I love that.
Yeah. So it just, it depends on the kid, you know. No, I kind of just, it was an opportunity to see their creativity, and then different art was from different places. Some of it, I don't know if you know about Saatchi and Saatchi. They are an art house in New York. And they champion new and young artists. And they, so you can go on their website and buy real art at, I think, rather reasonable prices from new artists. So I let them choose some art from there so they could start their own art collections.
Wow, nice. That's so great.
In the California Road Trip Republic, we believe you take adventure for a ride. Whether coastal cruising, mountain motoring, or redwood roaming, discover beauty around every turn. Your road trip can kick off from anywhere.
Starting route.
But it should always start at visitcalifornia.com. Then buckle up, crank those tunes, and discover why California is the ultimate playground.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Before we get too far away from it, I just want to clarify something that I said, which is that when I said, why are so many people in denial, there's a difference, I guess, in I just want to make it clear that I'm talking about people who seem to be angrily denying that anything's really happening. And I'm not talking about people who are trying to pay their rent and want to go back to work so that they can make some money.
No, but I mean,
No. I understood that. Yeah. No, what I'm talking about are people that are like in the street screaming, give me freedom or give me death. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, surprise. Exactly.
And be careful what you wish for. Yeah.
Well said.
Right. Well, in this case, it's not or, it's and.
And you said earlier that it's hard to determine how the virus originated. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, as you can imagine, I've read almost everything that I can get my hands on, and everybody sends me everything, and I listen to everything, and I talk to people at the UN about it, and I, because they have more information. So what I get, I bounce off of them. I saw a YouTube from a French immunologist, and he had said that he had an idea about it, that's now being checked out, but we don't know yet, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't want to scare anybody by giving theories on the radio, but I do think there's a lot of theories, and the theories are being investigated, but there are theories about whether it's a natural virus or a man-made virus, mm-hmm. and the problems created by what it is. And of course, this was the same theories about the HIV virus mm-hmm. that were never really fully resolved, whether it was man-made or whether it was a natural virus. And that's why, you know, no one really ever understood, because it was mutating and it was changing. And I think that we're not really sure yet. We don't have enough facts to know. Is COVID mutating? Is it changing? Does it, why does it affect some people so drastically and some people not at all? Is it because it's mutating, or is it because some people have different immunology? I mean, they've said what they understand so far is if you've had chickenpox or shingles or in the mouth cold sores, that for somehow that gives you some more immunity. Like you might get it, but you might not get it as severely. And that if you are you have a pre-existing condition of diabetes or heart condition or obesity, that you have a greater chance of not surviving it. Mm-hmm. So they've made some determinations of what they're starting to understand. And I believe this I read from the New York Times, but they don't have a full understanding of it.
You know, and it's just, it seems so incredibly insidious, because the symptoms that people get are so wildly different from one person to the next. And this week, when it came out that young people and middle-aged people are having strokes and, you know, often fatal. And that then I heard that, and then I heard that not only is it coronavirus, but it's the first symptom you get is you have a stroke. It's not like you have coronavirus and then you don't, it's not like you have a cough and a fever and then you have a stroke. No, you just have a stroke, and that's your tip off that you have coronavirus. I mean,
yeah.
Wow. You know,
well, I read that too. And the stroke, funnily enough, because the Stroke Foundation just reached out to us, I think today or yesterday, about doing a public service announcement. And we have to have some more information, because there's stress. We don't know how stress is factoring into all of this. Mm-hmm. And the stress right now is so big. It's so enormous, and it's insidious, because it's mounting very slowly because we're all at home. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't know. We've all have been having nightmares, right? Or very vivid, intense dreams. Mm-hmm. And I feel like all that is where a lot of our stress is playing out. And that just demonstrates the amount of suppressed stress that we're carrying through the day.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really important to release the stress. Mm-hmm. And as I made a little thing towards my grandmother and said, we should all go outside and scream. And what I've been doing lately is actually walking out on my balcony and screaming at the top of my lungs.
Are the neighbors calling the police?
They don't react at all.
Oh,
which
wow.
I found.
They're like, that's just Sharon.
I felt like, oh, they probably feel the same way. But I scream like a murder victim. Like I stand on my terrace and just scream. And then I come inside, and sometimes I punch a pillow a little bit, and then I feel a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like we're not able to go out to the gym. We're not able to go out and do our stuff. And that incredibly slow, suppressed stress really can cause a stroke. It really can. Mm-hmm. And especially because all of the responsibilities that we shared in life with everybody by the very fact that it does take a village is now singularly upon us within our homes. And it's a lot of stuff that we're not really good at. or know how to do. Like, who knows how to teach your kids school? Who knows how to, you know, really clean your bathroom when you've been a working person and you've hired someone else to do these things? You know, you're not really great at it. You know, you're cooking dinner every day. Sometimes it turns out, and sometimes it's like, wow, that's weird. You know, so.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, aside from, you know, a lot of people live in places where they probably couldn't go scream really loud outside. But I mean, you could shut yourself in a closet and do it or something like that also.
I think that's wise.
You know, and
get in the shower and scream.
Mm-hmm.
Get in the shower and cry. It's really important to not suppress it.
Yeah. And if you are in a place where you can't go outside and go for a walk or go for a hike, there are a ton of workout apps on your phone. You can set up you can really join a class for pretty much anything in your home.
Mm-hmm.
Pilates, yoga, I mean, any kind of cardio thing, all of those things.
Meditation.
Meditation.
You can
get
meditations online, which are really great.
Yeah, I like that.
I know I sent you the blue Tara chant.
Yeah.
The green Tara chant.
Green Tara. Yeah, it's so.
The green Tara chant,
incredible.
Which is, it's so beautiful. And when I do that, I feel so much better.
I don't normally, I really hadn't chanted for a long time. You know, I can't remember the last time. I mean, I had a couple of times back in the day, but it has a real effect. And it's the Green Tara chant by Kiva, and it's on YouTube, and you guys can look it up.
Really my good. Feeling about these things is that they're usually made to, as it was explained to me, that they're made so that the tones of them hits different neurological places in the brain that releases certain endorphins to create a mental state. And that's what the chanting is meant to do. Mm-hmm. So even like when I go, because I'm a Buddhist, I'll go and listen to these different Buddhists come and talk, these different monks. And they start chanting. And it's like, you have no idea what the chanting is when it starts. But if you start trying to just recreate the tones, you eventually fall into the tonal zone of the chanting. And even just doing the tones, if you don't even know exactly the chants, it becomes incredibly peaceful and relaxing.
Mm-hmm. And I
for
feel
me
like
anyway.
Now, yeah. And I feel like now with YouTube, you can YouTube chants, various chants, and sometimes they will spell out, they'll write out what the actual words are that are being chanted, which is convenient. So all of those things are good. And then, I wanted to go back to clarify the thing about the strokes, which is true that all the stress that we're under is so insidious right now. And it's creeping up on all of us in ways that we, you know, this last week, my entire back and neck completely seized up. Like I just couldn't even move. And I had to call. I mean, I tried a lot, you know, I was stretching, I was trying to get rid of it on my own, but eventually I just had to call my doctor. And he prescribed a kind of a turbocharged, ibuprofen, and then a muscle relaxant. So I'm about 4 days into that. I don't know, you know, I'm going to be really sorry to see those go, but, you know, because they only give you like 10 days worth.
You know, there's a thing called a Feldenkrais roller, and you can probably get it on Amazon. It's about a yard long. And it's about maybe 8 inches in diameter. It's a round, it's a tube. It's like a foam tube.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
And that might be really great for you. And you lay on it lengthwise, and it straightens your back out really good. And then you do some leg lifts and some knee lifts, and you do you kind of move your arms in circles.
Yeah.
And then flat on the floor. And then you take it and you turn. Feldenkrais. I think it's C-R-E-I-S. I don't remember exactly how you spell it. Feldenkrais.
Okay.
And then then you turn it widthwise and you put it down by your hips, and then you kind of walk your feet and you roll it up and down your back, and it'll put your back in.
Ooh. Okay.
And it's great. And you can put it under your neck, and it'll let your head, because it's so much time on the computer, we get knocked out or reading, and it like pulls your back up. I also saw on something I was reading, you can take a hand towel, fold it small, put duct tape around it, put it on your doorknob, and then you take those, you know, those stretchy, wide, they're like 5-inch wide rubber things, and they're long, and you stretch exercise with them. They're about a yard long. Mm-hmm. You take one of those and you put it through the towel that's hanging on your door. You tie it, and then you put it around your head from the back of your head to your forehead, and you lay on the floor. And then you can sort of walk your feet out. And then that gives you traction to pull your head back out from your shoulders and neck. And it will release that computer neck and that messed up neck and shoulder thing. And apparently it's a very good thing to do now when you can't get to your doctor and you can't get an adjustment and you can't get a massage and you can't get your neck put back in. During this time when your neck and low back keeps getting whacked out. And so it's just like a hand towel or a dish towel folded thin, wrapped in duct tape over the doorknob with the wide thing tied through it and around the back of your head to your forehead. And then you just walk your feet forward.
Oh, I love that. I just wrote both of those down. Yeah. And it's funny already, like the things, if you go to order things online, it's crazy, like the things that already are completely wiped out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, more and more and more. I've had, I've even had things happen where I put something in my cart and I come back a couple hours
and
later.
And it's gone.
Gone. No longer in stock.
Clorox is probably the most wealthy company in the world right now.
Oh, God. So sad. It's just so scary and sad that that was said. And then, you know, now people are seriously ill from ingesting.
It's making us go back to a simpler time and making us go back to a more sincere self. These are the things that I appreciate about it. You know, we're being forced to reevaluate ourselves and ourselves with others and what we want to give from ourselves and what we'll accept from others.
Yeah.
And I think that that's healthy. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, there are a lot of healthy aspects from this, the healthiness of the environment, being able to see the clear air, being able to see the clear water. You know, it's beautiful, all the progress and that it's doing, this is doing, giving to nature, that we're stopping beating the crap out of nature is really great.
Do you notice a difference in the air quality in Los Angeles?
It's better. It's not totally healed, but it seems quite a bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I still see, you know, the smog over Century City, and we still have a ways to go.
Yeah, because we live in a spot where we can really see a lot of, you know, we can see into the distance, and it's still, like today, it's pretty darn
hazy
looking.
Yeah.
It's still hazy today, yeah. I saw that too.
I mean, we've had so much rain and everything, which is great, but I think it gave everybody a little bit of a false sense of, you know, like, oh my God, the air is completely cleared up overnight. But I think it'll take a little bit more. And I, you know, it's also slightly depressing because I hope that after this is all over that people will be like, oh yes, we will give up our $1 billion you know, profits every year to just have the air be nicer, but it's not, probably not going to happen.
Probably not, Meg. Probably not. Well, so many businesses are starting to realize not only that they can work from home, but the amount of money they're saving working from home, that I think that many businesses will change their setup.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was just going to ask you, is how do you see going forward? Yes, those businesses probably will. But in terms of our business, which is, you know, for the most part, making movies and television shows, I haven't figured out how that's going to work until there's a vaccine anyway. And even then.
Well, I think we have to write animation.
Hope everybody likes animation.
You can sing, thank God. I wish I could sing. I mean, I think we're going to have to become more inventive and figure out other things.
Well, they're talking about the thing that we've heard is they're talking about boot camp, where they think they're going to shoot everything. They're going to get a cast together and a crew, and they're going to find a location, probably in Los Angeles, and they're going to sequester everyone in a hotel, some hotel somewhere, and nobody is allowed to leave to go home to see their families until it's all done. Now, first of all, you can't really do any of that unless everyone can be tested. But who are these people that they think they're going to get who are going to work on a movie for 4 months without ever going home to see their families? I mean, I just don't understand.
Well, and what about the hotel staff?
I know. I mean, it just doesn't.
They're going home.
There's so many holes in it. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And the people on a crew. I mean, a certain percentage you could get away with keeping sort of quarantined, but a production crew of any sort still has to engage with the outer world.
I think we've been on enough films to really understand the kind of engagement we're talking about. Yeah. And I think there's probably, that's a very unsafe plan.
Yeah, I agree. And you would have to test people. If you're not going to quarantine everybody like that, you would have to test everyone first thing in the morning, every single person, and then again at the end of the day. And I mean, there, you can't even get a test right now, barely. You know?
Right. Right. Yeah, I think there's a real desire for everything to happen. It's just the logic of this right now is also the very fact that we're not united as states is making it difficult, because we need a same protocol, because otherwise people are just going to keep moving state to state and it's just going to keep moving around.
Well, yeah, that's the thing about relaxing these stay-at-homes is it's just opening up a can of worms that then it's going to take even longer. I mean, I wish there was a national
leader? National leader?
I wish there was a consistent national policy where everyone was on a stay-at-home for X amount of time, and that would have been a lot more helpful, I think.
Well, I think at this point, we're way beyond all that. And, you know, even in places like in Italy, where they did have a standard, right, where they did everything, we have to figure out why their death rate was so much higher than like the countries. Like if we look, which is very strange, the countries that are all female led have had the least deaths of every other country.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know why. I don't know why.
New Zealand and Germany.
And Norway and all these countries have the least deaths. And why? What did they do? Why is that different? Why are these countries having different ratio of illness and death? Why are they having so much less death? We need to...
Do you think there's some relationship between a female leader and a better outcome or a better?
Well, I think if it was one, but it's like five or six. Mm-hmm. And so there has to be some protocol, some information, some intelligence that we can glean, not just because they're women, but because there are countries that have had such a better response. I think we have to glean some intelligence. Why? How are you doing it so that it's better? Why? How's that working? Mm-hmm. I don't think we're doing enough global partnership to understand what's going on. I feel like, you know, they can only take samples from people who have it. My assistant got a COVID test. She didn't get a result for 23 days.
Wow.
In the meantime, she went to another place and got a result in 24 hours because she'd been running a fever for 4 days.
Oh my gosh.
And she was negative. But the first test, at a certain point, I mean, after she didn't get a result in a week, I was like, you have to go somewhere else and get a test. You know, this is really crazy. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you could go one place and get a result in 24 hours and another place took 23 days is
yeah,
just...
Yeah, and they're saying that there have been a lot of false positives and false negatives.
Because I don't think we know enough. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we can only learn enough by having the positive tests. But this is the very same thing that happened with AIDS. Everybody was so separate and everybody was competitive about finding the cure or the vaccine. And so there wasn't enough shared information. And this lack of shared information, shared research, shared everything is really foolish. And that's why, though I worked for AMFAR, I also went out and worked for so many other AIDS organizations. Because I didn't believe in this idea of isolation and lack of comparative analytics.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're coming at this from a different place than we are because you are way more connected than we are. You know people who are experts in their fields on this, and we know you. So we're getting all of our information from you, basically.
Well, I can't say that my information is definitive or correct. All I can say is that I'm reading everything I can get my hands on, and I'm talking to people, and I know that the UN is working really hard to run down all these leads that people think it's one thing. They do send test groups to track it down and see, is that in fact what it is? They are really on it. I don't fully comprehend defunding World Health or backing away from UN or changing the leaders of these organizations that are working towards results. I think when we're in it and we're in it so deep, unless these people are really failing in some way or corrupt in some way, we want to keep them invested. So I'm not really sure why that's happening. I don't have any information or understanding why that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just, you know, your activism is so... I mean, thank you for that, Sharon, because I know that there are a lot of great activists in the world. I don't know many of them. I know you. And it's so incredible that you do what you do, and it's so wonderful. And
I don't feel like I'm doing anything right now. And I like everybody, feel so helpless about this and so wish I had something more to offer.
Well, I'm talking, and I'm also talking about what you've done in terms of AIDS, too, which
well, thank God we're at least at this point with that.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Oh, yeah. You know, I just, I don't know what my problem is. I either am lazy or I don't have the courage of my convictions or I'm scared or for whatever reason, I don't ever really do much of anything. And, you know, I'm not proud of it, but there it is. But I know that Nick, Nick thinks you're quite heroic also.
That's true. Well, the last time we saw you, I believe I compared, I said, there's only one of her. She's of all.
Thank God.
And I said, because she hugged you once in a leopard print bikini and her body with her body toasty warm from the sun. And you said, no, I'm not just that.
I'm grateful I survived that.
I thought he was going to pass out. Do you remember that? We were in Mexico and we ran into you.
It was a tough
You
hug.
Were out by the pool and we were checking out. And you came racing in this, you know, pretty staggering leopard print bikini. And you gave me a hug. And that's how I knew that your skin was warm. And then you gave Nick a hug. And I thought he was going to lose consciousness.
Oh, jeez. Can't do that.
Well, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity.
I'm so glad that that happened because I'm old and it's never going to happen again.
I don't know. I've seen you in a bathing suit a couple of times in the last year and it's looking pretty good. But wait, what did you say, honey?
Oh, I said that you seem like a member of the Super Friends, but like that's the mix is you could easily be cast as a superhero while at the same time, you have the fortitude and soul of a Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Oh my God.
Isn't that cool?
Nothing could make me feel better. You know, her quotes are so beautiful. And she, you know, she really did it right. She did everything right. She married the right guy. She did the right things. She did everything right. She's it to me. She's everything. She's everything right. She understood her own personal emancipation.
Mm. He said that last night when we came back from we had a curbside visit with Sharon about a week ago.
Which was unbelievable. When my grandma died and you guys showed up at the end of my driveway. And we all stood outside in our masks or you stayed in your car, but I stood in my mask and you had your kind of monkey face, little mask on there, Nick. And it was so deeply moving to me that you understood that I needed a compassion in my grief. It just, that's who you are though.
Well,
it's
you
just
know,
so touching to me.
I spent a lot of, and you're not alone, you've got your kids there with you, but I spent a lot of time, I spent a lot of time without someone in my life when I was younger and before Nick, and I can remember that feeling of just wishing that someone was there, someone that I could really talk to. And
yeah, lean on.
Yeah. And so yeah. I always want to try to be there, and you've been such a good friend, and
thank you.
It's really nice. But
well, you guys are wonderful, and
yeah. Well, let me do a little wrap up. What, honey?
We're learning.
Let me do a little wrap up here for the children, which is thank you yet again for tuning in to another scintillating and this time quite informative and thought-provoking episode of In Bed with Nick and Megan. And thank you so much, Sharon Stone. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Sharon.
Good night, love bugs.
In Bed with Nick and Megan is an Earwolf production. It's produced by Megan Mullally, Kevin Bartelt, and Michael Landry. Executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon. Music by Nancy and Beth, which can be found at www.nancyandbeth.com. If you enjoyed In Bed with Nick and Megan, make sure to rate it and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.